Hello. You have reached Quest for Truth, episode 156.
I am trying to get in touch with, Keith.
Hold on. Keith, there's some guy on the phone for you.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce that word.
That one guy, yeah.
Let's see if I got he does that OTR thing. with
those really cool retrobots, huh?
You know it.
Oh yeah, we know about the retrobots. We they're the stars of the show. This other guy's just trying to milk
milking the publicity on it, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, as much as I like you, it's time for this.
Healthsley Podcast Network, HBN, in conjunction with Protectors of the Book, presents Quest for Truth, seeking the truth about God, faith, and the Bible. And now, here are your hosts.
Hello, and welcome to Quest for Truth. I am your host, Keith Healthsley, live from the downtown Donaldson Healthsley Studios, Church House Studios. And with me, as usual, thankfully, after a long period of time, is our co-host, live from the far reaches of reality and Western Arkansas,
Nathan Caldwell. Yay!
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something. We've got a great show planned today. As a matter of fact, do we want to meet the hosts, or do we want to go on to the show?
Yeah, we could do a meet the host. Do you want to do our quiz first?
Let's do our quiz first. Yes, we have a quiz from Babylon Bee that should be a funny little game that sounds pretty interesting.
David, what are you doing?
I think we're going to,
Hi, Callie. Just working the audio controls.
How come Keith sounds like Nathan, and Nathan sounds like Keith?
You noticed that. It's because of this little switch, right here.
This one.
You're a funny little guy.
You're no fun at all, Kelly.
Sorry about that, Keith, and Nathan. David was playing with the audio controls. You should be good now.
Go ahead with that quiz now.
All right, well, let's get to that quiz then, now that we have our control room issues under control here. And
how did they do that?
I don't know. I guess you're getting really good at that mixing stuff in there.
That's creepy. Okay, anyway.
Well, Babylon Bee had a quiz, and it is called, what is it, How to Tell If You're Woke. And
I asked, how woke are you?
That's
take
it.
The quiz.
And I asked you to pull that up, and you're going to be the one who administered the quiz.
The first thing I wanted to do is figure out what in the world is woke. Because I had heard it before on some other stuff. You know, I listened to Todd Friel and his Wretched Radio. And if you don't, I do recommend you subscribe to that podcast. That was really a good show. That's right up the alley of, I like him about as much as I like, maybe a little more. Forgive me, Greg, than Stand to Reason, although I love Stand to Reason, and I might like them about equal, but it's that good of a program.
So yeah, it's called Wretched Radio. That's
Wretched Radio.
WRETCHED?
Yep. Okay. Yep. So it's a great show. Also available at wretched.org. Great show. But what is woke? Because I didn't know. And this is what the definition is. This is the one that more applies. There's a few definitions, but this one is the one that most applies. It is slang, an adjective, actively aware of systemic injustices and prejudices, especially those related to civil and human rights. Now, these are the sentences examples. In light of recent incidents of police brutality, it is important to stay woke. Next sentence. He took one African American history class, and now he thinks he's woke. So those are the, and that is from dictionary.com.
Oh.
I think that's good enough definition.
Okay, so it's not like from UrbanDictionary.com.
Well, you know,
it's from actual dictionary.com.
It's what it says.
Okay. That's
good. And that's one good thing about search engines. They pull up those.
Yeah.
All right. So remember, folks, this is from the Babylon Bee, or sorry, not the Babylon Bee. It's from BabylonBee.com, which is called the Babylon Bee. Let me explain something. Guys, this is satire. If you don't know that, you're going to be disturbed. Just, it don't matter what you read on the site. If you don't know it's satire, you're going to be disturbed.
And even if you know it's satire, it's still disturbing sometimes.
It may be a little disturbing. Just remember that. And we'll begin. Now, they're started off by saying, think you're truly woke? Time to put your money where your mouth is. Money? Who has money? Anyway, take our... I said that, they didn't. Back to their quiz.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
take our definitive wokeness quiz. What a name. And find out once and for all if you're super woke or just plain toxic. I have a... inkling what they're going to call us, and we're going to answer the questions correctly.
And so listeners are going to play along.
Yeah, but the thing is if listeners are going to play along, they're probably, a lot of them probably going to have the same answers we do anyway, right?
Maybe, it depends, who knows.
if we don't choose your answer, yeah, I guess you'll have to take the quiz yourself. A movie comes out, including representation for all races. How do you respond? Here are the choices. Complain about lack of representation for LGBT people. I'm sorry, it's LBGT. I apologize. Applaud the filmmaker's diversity and enjoy the movie. Scream at the sky. Or yell, stay in your lane, whitey, whenever you see a white person come on the screen.
Okay, I want to say number two.
I would say that.
I think I would just applaud their effort, enjoy the show. To me, the LGBT is not a race of people. It's a people group, but it's not a race. So
I agree.
That wouldn't apply.
I agree.
So send me your hate mail. Go ahead.
I believe it's the contact form's available on podcast.heltsley.net. That's HELTSLEY.
Look for the contact page. Send me hate mail. It's okay.
And we may even read it on the show. Like they say on Arrested Radio, ixnay on the airing sway. All right. President Trump says something reasonable.
What
you do?
He says what? Is that possible? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He says a lot of things reasonable personally, but that's not... Anyway. First choice, take to the streets to protest wearing a genital-themed hat.
Okay. Yeah, right.
That is not the best. We know that, but people do it. So, second choice, blame it on the Russians. Third choice, applaud the decision. Fourth choice, scream at the sky.
I'm going to go with three because I don't care if it's Trump or any politician. If they say something reasonable, they'll applaud that decision.
Third question. You see a man opening a door for a woman. What do you do? Continue about your day as though you didn't just witness an egregious violation of her womanhood? Beat him to death with your well-worn copy of The Feminine Mystique? Scream at the sky? Or lecture him on his problematic behavior.
What? Or five. I can see! that's just me. Sorry, everybody else in the whole wide world.
Well, the closest thing I can see to ours is the first one, because...
What was the first one again?
Continue about your day as though you didn't just witness an egregious violation of her womanhood. Because guess what? You didn't just witness an egregious violation of her womanhood.
It's only...
It was actually polite!
Yeah, no one's saying number one on that one. It's only a violation if the woman has already stated, please don't open my door for me.
Right.
Then I would respect that. But until she says that, then I'd open up a door.
You come upon a Bible passage that contradicts your worldview.
That never happens.
How do you exegete it?
How do you exegete it? That means how do you...
How do you interpret it?
Interpret it, okay.
Modify your worldview to the text and repent of your wrong thinking. come out with your heretical views in a softball online interview, then claim you're being persecuted for your opinion, reinterpret the text in light of your worldview, throw the book in the trash, then scream at the sky.
There's a lot of screaming at the sky going on. Whatever that means, I'm going to go with the, I think the first one.
Modify your worldview. That's what I chose.
Because I'm always of an opinion that the Bible's right, and I'm generally wrong, whether there's a disagreement. Then if I happen to agree with the Bible, then, wow, that happened. You know what I mean?
Yep. A coworker says good morning to you as you sit down at your desk. What do you say back?
I would say good morning. How you doing?
That's one of the choices. So,
oh, go ahead.
But the choices are, excuse yourself, walk down to the parking lot, then scream at the sky. Okay. You could say, how could it possibly be a good morning when women only make 77 cents on the dollar, you pick? Or you could say, excuse me, I didn't consent to this conversation. Good day. I'm going to say you say good morning.
I wouldn't say good morning. If I was going to play that card about women only make 77 cents on a dollar, guess how many people, cents on a dollar, disabled people make? A heck of a lot less than that. So I don't feel sorry for you there, ladies who work. When it comes
well,
to that.
You know, a lot of women that work, something tells me they don't feel sorry either. Because it's only, I don't know, you know what, I'm speaking out of turn. I'm not a woman, so I don't really have a place to have the conversation, I don't think. So.
But I always say that in jest, because I understand the issue with that. But no, I'll just...
But that's not every single place, either.
Yeah, and I know people who would say, what's so good about it? But hey, you know, you got a chip on your shoulder, that's you.
Surely not every single place the woman is treated that way. I pray not.
No, you know, there's plenty of job markets where women make just as much as the men do, if not more in some. And so for doing the same work, that's what I can observe becoming less and less of an issue.
Well, good, good. Somebody's making progress somewhere, then. Because that did used to be a problem, correct?
It did used to be a problem that women, for one, were given a lower paid jobs, and men usually got the upper jobs. But when they did hold a similar job title, generally the women would get paid less, or they might get passed over for promotions where the man who didn't do as good of a job would get promoted or paid
more. Right, that's the problem.
That's the old school philosophy. And it goes back to the issue of the only reason a woman's in the job market is to find a man and start a family, or she's only going to be there until she gets pregnant and she'll go home. And that whole train of thought has changed just
right.
Over the last couple of decades. It's just not the issue that it used to be.
Right. And, of course, I think both of us could agree that if a woman is doing the exact same job just as well as a man, they should get the same pay as the man gets. With the exception, if the guy's been there longer, you do get raises as you go.
Well,
have to take that into consideration.
But it's consideration, then, is longevity and
right.
And your skill set. It shouldn't be about your gender. So, yeah,
no,
if a man has indeed been there longer and is more skilled, don't trash him just because you want to put a woman in the spot. But if the woman is the more skilled, then she should have the better shot. It should always be more about your skill set and experience, not gender or color or race, creed, or anything else.
Right. Okay, the next one is, send your hate mails to... Protectors of the Book at facebook.com. I think you can actually directly email there. Anyway, you get a $1,500 tax refund check from the IRS. What do you do with the money? Wow. In a defiant gesture, hurl the check toward the heavens, then scream at the sky.
And then cash it, put it to bank. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Mail it right back. Don't you know that tax cuts kill people? Sure. Send the money to minorities to assuage your white guilt. Take the take the family to Cracker Barrel, maybe put the rest in savings.
Yeah, that one.
That one. I have nothing wrong with giving anything to charity, but it is not to assuage guilt.
You said that was a tax refund check?
Yes.
So it's my money anyway that I've let the government hold, so it's not the government's not giving me anything that's not already mine. So.
That's right.
Last one. Heck yeah.
All right. I don't even know what this word is, and I may have to look it up.
Yeah, spell it out.
Cisgendered. C-I-S.
Cisgendered. Yeah, that's the new word for confused gender.
Okay.
I don't know what it means or where it comes from, but I've heard Greg Huckel use that word before, and it refers to the whole ball of wax of mixed up gender people.
Okay. So it says, a cisgendered male is driving along the street as you walk down the sidewalk. What is the proper course of action? Smile and wave.
Wait, he's driving down the street while I'm walking down the sidewalk. Okay, I got it. Go ahead, keep on reading.
I love these guys. Smile and wave. Glare at him, then run back to your house and write about how badly he oppressed you on your Tumblr account.
Yeah!
Begin pounding on his window and scream, stay in your lane, whitey. Okay. Leap in front of the car as a metaphor for how oppressed you are, then scream at the sky as you wait for help to arrive. Okay, none of these is what I would do. I guess I'll choose smile and wave. What I would do is just keep walking because he's just one car. There's no way of telling one car from another.
Yeah, I would probably, if anything, it would be smile and wave. Or like I said, just keep walking because... But it says you see him in his car, so he's got your attention. And I would be inclined to do that, smile and wave at somebody and keep on going.
Right. An ethnic food restaurant opens in your city. What do you do? Try it out and keep patronizing it if I have a good experience. Scream at the sky. Protest the restaurant's blatant cultural appropriation. Protest the restaurant for not giving away all of its food for free in a Marxist business model.
Okay.
That's the choices.
Yeah, I would go with the first one.
The first one's closer to mine. But, you know, I'm really picky about my food. And if it doesn't sound like something I would like, I probably wouldn't try it.
So if it was like a, you know, Vietnamese...
I'd probably not.
Kimchi restaurant or something.
Yeah.
You probably
just walk on by.
But if it was like a Taco Bell or, you know, Mexican restaurant, you'd probably go.
Says, how woke are we? We're not woke at all. President Trump, is that you? You're not woke at all. Go educate yourself and do better. Yeah, whatever. Of course, remember, guys, this is satire. They don't really mean that. But the point I think they're trying to make, and by the way, if you're from the Babylon Bee and you're listening to the show, we would love to interview you, so please.
That would be totally amazing if you are, but yeah.
Yeah. But I think what the point they're trying to make is common sense a lot of times isn't working in the society we live in today because everything's twisted and turned and messed up the wrong way. So those are my thoughts. What do you get?
Yeah, I mean, it's purposely trying to demonstrate how crazy and irrational people can be for the sake of a hot button issue.
I'll try something real quick. I've got a thought about this, and I'm going to say, so everywhere it's a valid choice, I'm clicking scream at the sky.
Okay.
Probably going to say I'm really woke. By the way, Lord knows I would never throw the Bible in the trash.
Oh.
Yeah.
Keep it on. Yeah, I'm not sure what that whole scream with the sky thing is. It's just.
I bet you they're going to say, you're the wokest you can be, or something.
What, that or whichever one is the most in-your-face rebellious one out there.
All right, scream with the sky. Woke city, population you.
Okay,
you are the most woke that is currently possible. Unfortunately, you'll never really be woke enough. You still have to trip over yourself every day trying to show everyone how woke you are. Or one day you'll be back at the bottom of the totem pole. Stay woke.
All right, whatever.
But, you know, that goes to another thing, though. How much of this is people actually believing what they're believing and actually doing according to their beliefs, and how much of it is a little bit of a pharisaical view side of that view, and just being showy?
Yeah, and you know, things that are, you know, hot button topics, pop culture issues, people hop on the bandwagon just because it is the pop culture cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Without even really thinking about it. You know, granted, we are supposed to live life and try to get along and play well with one another, but you can only do that so far and stay within the realm of what God teaches. Otherwise, you're not grounded in anything, and you're just being led by the nose to go where the wind blows you.
Yep.
Speaking of such things, are you ready to move on to a Meet the Host segment?
Sure.
Meet the Host.
Okay. Do you have anything in particular you want to?
Visited some more houses at church.
Oh, cool.
Guys, we need prayer for Antioch. Just because we're a small congregation and we need God to intervene here. We're trying. We're out there working.
How big of a town or community is Antioch?
Now, it's Houston, Arkansas, and it's a small town. Houston is very small.
So it's about 2,000 or 5,000 or...
Maybe 500.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm guessing...
As big as that?
Little.
Wow.
It's little.
Donaldson's only 200.
It may not be 500.
You're like the big city compared to me.
I guess I can look up the population real quick.
Now, the town where we go to church at is a population of about that size, about 500 or 600. So I kind of get the idea of how big you're talking of. Which leads me to the next thing is, how big is the community? Because in a town that small, you clearly have to rely on neighboring towns and neighboring areas for certain things.
Houston is a town in Perry County, Arkansas. The population was 159 at the 2000 census.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So let's see if it's small as in Donaldson.
Yeah. But now, we have Perryville, too, which is a little bit larger place, mm-hmm. right next to us. So we could pull people from there. But the point is there's 15 of us.
Well, what I mean by the community is, for example, let's say you're walking down the streets there in Houston and you say, hey, where do you go to get your car fixed? Or where do you go shopping at? Where do you go to a restaurant? If they say some other town, that's part of the community of where your people go routinely.
That is interesting thought.
And so you could, you know, go, you know, do the prayer walk thing, you know, up and down the streets of Houston. But also, if you know that people routinely do their banking or other things the next town over or somewhere else, include those areas in who you try to contact.
That is a good thought. And the prayer walk idea, I never even thought of. I may send some people next time we are doing an outreach. I may just send people out to pray over the streets of Houston.
Right, and generally, what you want to do on a prayer walk is, you know, hey, pick the street, walk all the way down from one end to the other. Anytime you see somebody outdoors, you know, Rick and Lee is one yard. Stop, you know, wave, talk to them. How you doing this morning? That's part of the prayer walk. It's not just we're covertly walking up and down the streets praying. Make contact if you see people out.
Right.
You know.
And right. But you're not having to knock on doors at that point.
No, you're not really knocking on doors. You could knock on a door, but keep it short, like,
right. Hey, we're
from Antioch Church. We're just interested to know if you've ever been invited, and we'd like to have you come, and then make it be it.
Right.
And either they'll talk more, or they'll shoot you off their yard,
or whatever. Yeah, either way, you keep going.
Yeah, you just take it with a grain of salt and keep on going. That's some rule of thumb how that ought to work. So I hope you get some good contacts and some good.
I'm gonna write that down.
Some good growth going on there.
That is a good idea.
Just a little bit of non-intrusive things to participate. Mm-hmm. Let people know, hey, here we are. Or you know, here's a question too. I've heard people. Use is, hey, we're from the Antioch Church. Have you heard about us? Now you open up a can of worms because maybe they have and maybe it's not good.
Right.
But if
that gives you an opportunity to say, well, there's a new pastor.
Exactly. Exactly. It gives you the opportunity to say, well, I don't know who caused that bad experience for you, but we have a new pastor. We have new people. It's not the same people as it used to be, or whatever, you know, truthfully, the situation.
Right, right.
And say, give it, come back and give us a shot. Because, and maybe they will. Maybe they won't.
That is a good, thank you for that. Now, what about you?
What about me? Well, we had funerals last week. Got funeral this week. This week, the guy whose funeral it is not somebody I really knew that well. Used to go to the church where you were formerly members of. But it, you know, he's probably prominent guy at that church. So we thought, if we could swing it, we'd go back, at least for the visitation. Last week, the funeral was for a guy who was kind of a close friend that we've had over the past several years, and he'd drive me places or doctor appointments and stuff, do some computer work with me and whatnot. And so it was kind of sad to see him go. In his coffin, they put a computer mouse in one hand and a ham radio microphone in the other hand. So that's what he.
They really did that.
Yeah, that's what his big hobbies was computer things.
I've never heard of him doing that though. And he
was into ham radios. So they,
wow.
They did that. And it's like there was something in his pocket. They said probably a joke book or something. I don't remember.
Oh well.
Because he was a pretty humorous guy. But that's some late breaking. Issues. Today, the wild moose couldn't be here today because he's going to a doctor appointment. Just some follow-up stuff to make sure. He had an operation last month on one of his eyes, and it's been healing up pretty well. It's just a follow-up to make sure.
So he's doing okay?
Oh, yeah. Yep, and I guess some more, I don't know if it's meet the host or not, but today, this morning, even as we speak, by the time this gets posted, it'll be old news, but Billy Graham died today.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a sad thing. But being 99, he's definitely lived a long, full life.
I figure it's sadder for us than it is for him.
Yeah, I'd seen on Twitter, I think it was Tom Rainer, but it might have been with other big name people out there in the world of Christianity, was saying that the last time that they were with him, he was saying how much he missed his wife and how much he missed heaven. And so now he has a chance to reunite.
Good.
And so that's that. Another thing that I've been noticing a lot in the last week or so, because wasn't it last week they had that school shooting where 17 or 19 people were shot up?
In Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, of course, you're sad that it happens. But I noticed that the president almost immediately had made some kind of a statement, and as a president should, and he didn't get any blowback from it at all. And
good.
I didn't read what his statement was. So I'm thinking, hey, Donald Trump is actually doing the right thing, and he's talking the right. So he's saying the right things about the incident. Then later he comes out. He makes some kind of a statement about the FBI, and it's sad that you didn't know this. And you're going to say something.
Yeah, you know what? I read that statement, and he said, you know, they're too busy trying to investigate this false Russian collusion thing, is what he was saying, and they're not doing their job. And you know something? He may very well be right.
I seen it where you had tweeted that or something like that.
Yeah, I retweeted it. Yeah.
And I thought, wow, you know, there's probably some truth to that. I don't know. I don't even want to presume to know how much that may or may not be true. But apparently, all those woke citizens out there decided that suddenly Trump is hiding behind the bodies of fallen school children to blame the FBI for stuff that's his fault. I'm like, no, wait a minute.
Actually, I think it's the other way around. I think he's saying, hey, you're not doing your job. Stop focusing on crap.
All right. And focus, you know, if you focus on real issues and not some of this, because how long has it been going on with the FBI and
too long.
And Russian since before the election?
And from what I understand, it isn't Trump that was having a Russian collusion, but there was a Russian collusion, but it wasn't Trump.
The way I understand it, Trump was a squeaky wheel about it because he was saying it was Hillary who was colluding. And then somehow it ping-ponged back to him in collusion. But I thought, you know, the time frame they're saying he did was the time frame whenever he was looking into the possibility that it was her. And it's just, and I think early on, one of the FBI people says there's nothing to it, but the pressure was on. He says, well, fine, we'll look into it. And they've never been able to find anything. And even this latest go around with, what's his name, Marshall or whatever his name is, has found nothing. And so now all the liberals or whoever's against Trump is saying there's something wrong with this. It's like, look, you know, whether there's something there or not, there's more important things in the world happening with school shootings and whatnot. It's time to, you know, quit playing all these petty games. A lot of it is the fact that the media keeps grooming Trump's ego, or rubbing his ego the wrong way, I guess I should say, and then Trump gets in this back and forth, and it's like, you know, stop doing that. It's like, you know, you're wasting a lot of time with petty garbage. That real world problems are happening, and it is time. People should just stop it and focus on the real world problems. The other issue I've seen with that is that there's just been so much garbage flying around the web. People saying, well, if you're for the GOP, you're for the Russians. If you're for the NRA, you're for the Russians. If you're for Trump, you're for the Russians. If you're this, you're for the Russians. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then you have people on the other side saying that in the past year, there's been so many people killed by gun violence. There's been double, triple, 10 times numbers who die from, you know, cars or from drugs or from this thing or that thing. We should ban all the cars and the drugs and the and like, stop. Okay, now you're being stupid the other direction. But I guess the point there, even this morning I seen somebody posting about a conversation between a gun rights person and a anti-gun person. And they of course, they stacked the deck where they made the gun rights person look like the sane one and the other one saying, no, it's the guns. No, it's the guns. Ban the guns. And the guy's trying to make a point. It's like, guns don't kill people. Sure they do. Sure. Says, well, fine. Whenever you have a cop kill somebody, how can you blame the cop and not the gun?
That's right. That's right.
Or if you have, you know, any other kind of a crime, you blame the person, not
That's right.
the vehicle of the crime.
That's right.
And I think if you read all the garbage that's flying around out there on social media, neither side is right. Both sides are being extremely extreme. But there is a middle ground where something needs to be done. Something can be done. But people need to stop being so stupid about it and sit down and actually have a sane discussion about things.
You know. Yep.
Ugh, life in our world today.
And,
for our main topic...
Main topic.
This is not a new topic. I've heard about this some time ago. It's called what's it called? Liar, lunatic, or lord? And I'd heard somewhere that some college professor got talking about this with somebody, and in a moment of brilliance, he thought of a fourth L word to add to this concept, and that is the word lunatic.
No.
And so ever since then, there's been people batting around.
It was legend, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, sorry, legend. That's right. Liar, lunatic, lord, and the fourth L word was legend. Now, let me back up a little bit and say that this concept of liar, lunatic, lord is said to have started from C.S. Lewis. If he didn't come up with it himself originally, it is certainly because of his book, Mere Christianity, that it became well-known and popularized.
It's a brilliant concept. Because all you're doing is taking Jesus at his word, at what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot... Well, maybe... I don't know if we have time to talk about this, but just real quick, people who claim that Jesus was a good man, but not God, there's no way that could be, because Jesus claimed to be God. And a good man who is not God does not claim to be God. Maybe you might want to expand on that.
If you ever read Mere Christianity, and you ever read this bit that C.S. Lewis wrote, it takes up all of about two sentences. He does not even use this as a parallel or an argument to prove anything. All he really states is, I don't have it handy, but it's words to the effect of, if you consider the words of Christ and what he says about himself,
right,
you either... have to count him as a liar or a lunatic, neither of which can be proven out because of whatever. And so that leaves Lord, which is
right.
the most important. And so then the rest of his article goes on to talk about Jesus as Lord. And that's all he does. Is in about two sentences, he uses that phrase, and that's it. Now, since then, pastors and teachers and all sorts of people have taken that liar, lunatic, lord and really broken it down and gone through and proven out each point that you can't take Jesus's words and say that he was a liar, because if he lied about things, he says so many things that are truthful that why would he lie about any of it? He's not a lunatic. because of his teachings, and that leads the Lord. Well, as this person points out, I'm going to try to do my best to role play this, as he says, well, what about legend? In this guy's video, he says the concept of liar and lunatic can easily be shot down, and so therefore he's trying to push for the legend possibility. Now, legend, he says, means that Jesus could very well have been a real person, but added later teaching makes him bigger than life. He goes on to say that the New Testament books were not written until 150 to 250 A.D., well after the time of Jesus.
Actually, I think his dating might be a little off, because I think some of them were within 100 years of it. Was it not?
I'm not saying. I'm an atheist.
I know, but...
Okay, whenever people say the New Testament was not written until 150 to 250 A.D.,
that's not true.
What they're referring to is this. The oldest known tangible pieces of paper with ink written upon them date to 150 to 200 years.
Yeah, that doesn't. Yeah. Those aren't the original copies, though.
Right. But I'm just trying to say, whenever you hear an atheist or someone challenge the faith, and they say, "Well, the Bible was made up because it wasn't written for 150 to 250 years," the one thing they're trying to tell you is, if you grab a piece of paper and it has ink on it that spells out words of the New Testament, the oldest one you're going to find dates to that time frame. Now, you're going to say...
Oh, well, you know, if you grab the oldest automobile made by Ford Motors, what if you can't find one of the earlier models? Are they going to then say that Ford Motors didn't really start until whatever the earliest one they can find is? It doesn't prove anything. The writers of the New Testament were people that were there.
Right. Let me get touch back on this topic in just a moment. I think I know where you're going with this. But the next note I have here says, at best, the earliest writing was 50 A.D., written by Paul, and that's like only now beginning to write about some obscure 1990s pop star, somebody like Vanilla Ice. That's their words, not mine.
That don't even make sense.
Well, if it was 50 A.D., if Christ lived for 30 years, he was crucified 20 years before that time. So, in other words, he's saying, even if you take the earliest writing, which was from Paul, written in 50 A.D., would have been 20 years after the crucifixion, there's nothing written about Jesus for 20 years. That's like right now, us going 20 years back in the mid to late 90s and picking an obscure pop star that few people have heard about and starting to write about him.
Well, first of all, who's to say there wasn't writing about him? People wrote, as a matter of fact, a lot of your New Testament is actually letters to each other that were included. Right. Well, what if you had some letters that were included, but you also have some letters that maybe weren't inspired by the Holy Spirit, but weren't included anywhere. Just, they were letters to churches. Guess what? They mentioned Jesus Christ, and before somebody says, well, those aren't books, neither are some of the things that this person is critiquing.
Well, the earliest writing that this guy refers to by Paul is, of course, a letter to Galatians, which, of course, is a letter to Galatians. So I don't think that's going to be an issue, saying that they're a book or they're a letter is going to be a moot point. He's just saying that the earliest known writing is this letter to Galatians written by Paul. And what he's trying to say is, even if you consider that, which that original autograph does no longer exist,
Right.
And if you look at what Paul is saying there, he writes about encouraging people who are being persecuted, and he refers to Jesus as Lord and Savior, but he doesn't give any details about Jesus' life, nothing about Christmas story, nothing about the crucifixion. He just calls him Lord and Savior without going into the details of why he's calling him Lord and Savior. So we don't know who Jesus was or what his life was like, so therefore he still could be considered legend.
But then take Paul's other writings, which do go into details, because you've apparently have a thing about Paul, then let's take Paul's other writings, whether or not they were later in date, because we already know he felt that Jesus was Lord and Savior.
Right. And what this so guy, now what you've this got guy that, would say,
so add it to...
What he would say is that that may be, again, he's saying that Paul does refer to Jesus as Lord and Savior, but Paul, in any of his letters, never sits down and says, Jesus healed the sick people. Paul never specifically outlines or details Jesus feeding the 5,000. He never describes the crucifixion. The most he does, I think in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, he in great pain talks about the Last Supper.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about as close as he gets to describing anything Jesus actually did.
Romans 5:8, but God commended his love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That is, it may not mention a cross, but it is detailed.
Right, and so this guy would say he mentions it, but he doesn't say that Christ hung on a cross or that he was in a tomb for 3 days. So this guy who I'm writing these notes off of would tell you that based on Paul's writings, which came earlier, that because he didn't write it, he's saying all these stories sprang up about Jesus afterward.
Because you have to consider the audience. Who was he writing to? He was writing to people who already knew these stories, and he didn't have to address the death, burial, and resurrection, because they already knew. This was common knowledge to them. So he didn't have to go into great detail about the feeding of the 5,000, because odds are they may have already known about it.
Okay. You actually hit on a key argument that would knock the sales leg out of this guy. What I'm saying is, what this guy seems to be saying is, you have the writings, and then you have the matters of faith. In other words, he's saying, first comes the writings and the teachings, and then comes the developed faith movement. Until you have the writings, you can't have the movement.
Not true.
I'm just saying, this is what this guy's argument is based on. And out of the various other people that I've found on YouTube who have a similar type message out there, they all will say a similar thing, that the writings existed and then the religion was developed. And what I'm here to tell you, stepping out of character back into me, just what you are saying is, the religion was already a thing.
The
faith was already a thing. Paul was not writing anything new. He was just writing about what had already been taught. And in fact, if you look at Galatians, which even this particular atheist dude is talking about, he fully acknowledges Paul may have written this book, and it may have been around 50 AD. In Galatians 1, Paul gives an outline in no uncertain terms. He was saved. He spent 3 years here. He spent 15 years there. He spent so many years other places. And you can take that back to within 5 years of the cross.
Interesting.
And even at that early time, within 3 years of the cross, he had already been in contact with Peter and John, two of the key disciples who knew personally Jesus from the beginning.
And who also wrote New Testament books.
Who lived with Jesus, who experienced Jesus, who touched Jesus, who like I said, eventually wrote their own books of the Bible. And so even though nothing got written until 20 years after the fact, within 5 years of the crucifixion, Paul outlines this whole span of time where these teachings were already a thing. Galatia was not very close to the Holy Land. It's not particularly close to Jerusalem. And so by the time he wrote to this distant town about all these teachings had had a lot of time to grow on their own. And so it's not a matter of first comes the writing, then comes teaching. It's a matter of there's been something happening that's shaking up the world like crazy. And let me jot down some things for you. And so that's the core of why none of these things, challenges to being a legend, will hold up. Now let me continue reading down these notes here because there's more. The Gospels only came along later, and the various Gospel writers are unauthentic because they're anonymous. We don't really know who wrote them, and they all copied from one another.
That's not true. They are not anonymous.
Do you know who, which Gospel was written first?
No, I don't know which one was written first.
Mark.
That's right. It was written to the Romans. Gospel of Mark, I believe, was written to the Romans.
The Gospel of Mark was written also somewhere around 50 AD. Mm-hmm. The Gospel of Mark was only written within a year or two of Galatians. And some scholars believe it may have actually been written first. Mm-hmm. So trying to make it sound like the Gospel didn't come along until much later. No, they came along at pretty close to the same time that Paul was writing the Galatians. Now, traditionally...
And again, it's not the written part that came first. It's the actual event.
Right. Now, it's true that the books don't necessarily have the author's name on it for sure. For example, did Matthew write Matthew? Well, we don't really know. Did Mark write Mark? We don't really know.
You're right. It's not listed.
Scholars debate these things. Technically, they are anonymous. Traditionally, those are the names associated with them. And when I say traditionally, as early as around AD 100, by some of the early church fathers, like, say, Polycarp. Polycarp was a direct student of John.
Yeah, they knew... they knew a lot more to the time.
Right. They knew who wrote them. It wasn't just tradition. They knew who wrote them. Polycarp, being a student of John, you don't think he didn't know that John wrote John?
And the thing is, you have to realize, when a lot of these people wrote, or at least I know when Paul wrote, maybe, were not people that helped carry these things. I mean, somebody somewhere said, hey, this is from John, this is from Mark, this is from Luke, you know, it was registered somewhere that's who wrote these things.
Now, with Luke, I honestly would have to relook at the book itself. It maybe it doesn't say Luke wrote it, but between Luke and Acts...
Yeah,
Luke wrote Acts. And Luke refers in one of two writing the other.
Yep.
You have such things as writing style and authorship that scholars, I mean serious PhD holding scholars, can tell that this.
The author of Mark is
someone who didn't necessarily have a grasp of the Greek language, but the authors of Luke and Acts were the same person.
And another thing about Luke that's interesting is Luke, when he writes as a person who, in many of these things that he writes, was part of the events that happened. And interestingly enough, we see proof of that when Paul in 2 Timothy, I think, says, "Hey, I need you to come down." It's either 1 or 2 Timothy. Says, "Hey, I need you to come down here. The only person with me right now is..."
Right, but Luke. Yeah, and clearly in Acts, we definitely know Luke. It starts out, he writes in like third person, they went here and they went there. Mm-hmm. But midway through, it becomes, we went here and we did this. Mm-hmm. And so you know that at some point, he did in fact join up with Paul.
Yep.
And the thing is, by saying one copied after the other, well, that's not a big secret. Even J. Warner Wallace talks about that concept. Right. And he actually goes into great pains to show why that's important, that you can tell which one came first and why it's important that you can tell one copied from another. And it actually authenticates them, not unauthenticates them. Just because you don't have those original autographs does not mean that they weren't there. And remember when we had Chase Thompson on it? Even as late as 150 and 250 AD, there were so many copies of the New Testament around that the fact that there were so many copies around testifies that these were some important books, some important happenings, and they're all accurate. There's very little differences. And for having such a widespread writing all over the known world and having such little differences, you know that they were well preserved and maintained with the utmost of integrity. It's not like some crazy Jewish dude out there, "I'm going to make up this story about the Messiah came," and then no. So in my notes here, back to my notes, this guy says he's unconvinced that deception didn't take place. Now, remember, he already gave the argument, well, he's not going to bother with the liar or lunatic argument because clearly that's too easy to prove that that's not right. But here he's saying he's not entirely sure that deception didn't take place. He says the disciples may have been convinced that they saw miracles, and they may have been convinced that Jesus said that he was God's son. But there's no outside sources that verify that Jesus performed any miracles.
No, because you had an end source that said it, them.
Now, I would say that this guy does not know his Bible or ancient history, because there are outside sources. There are writings that says talks about Jesus learned magic while he was in Egypt, and he brought his magic back to the,
of course, that's just
to perform
what they thought.
Now, this is an outside writing. This is not Bible. This is an outside writing that is not scripture that says...
They perceived it was magic.
They perceived it was magic. They perceived that Jesus did, in fact, do miraculous things. They didn't understand it. They didn't know its source. They didn't know its true intent. But the fact that there are outside writings that says Jesus did amazing magical things from an outside source. If it was an inside source, they would be saying Jesus did the miracles from God. But it's an outside source. So they are using the pagan know-how of the day to try to describe it. That is just one example. So there are outside sources. This guy says there are no outside sources. So he's either misinformed or he's trying to do his own deception. He just goes on to say eyewitnesses are unreliable.
Well,
accounts match too well in parts and not very well in other parts. And my response to that is, duh, that is what makes a good eyewitness, actually.
Right.
If you read, again, J. Warner Wallace, who is a nationally known cold case crime detective, and ask any police detective, the best eyewitnesses, you will have areas that match so incredibly well and a lot that will conflict so incredibly horrible, because each person sees things a little different. Each person tells the same account a little different. So he's trying to say, because of the description of a good eyewitness, that it makes a bad eyewitness. And that is what's the word
contradictory?
The word that Greg Kokel likes to use. Suicidal. The suicidal argument. Yeah, yeah. The argument commits suicide on its own description.
Right.
And so granted, eyewitnesses, you can have problems in a court of law, you know, maybe they're gonna perjure themselves or whatever. But if you have a pool of eyewitnesses, whenever you start meshing up what matches well and what doesn't match well, you can get the core of the story. And in fact, the more you have that variance, the more accurate you know what your story is going to be. He goes on to say, Christ's story is too similar to other God legends like Mithras and Hercules and some others that clearly Christian leaders made this legend out of Jesus, you know, saying that he did things that he didn't do.
I've heard that argument before, and I can't remember what the defense of it was, but...
Well, I just heard it recently, within the last couple of weeks, again on either Stand to Reason or some podcast, rather. And the thing is, if you have someone say, well, let me describe this to you, and they'll describe a virgin birth, they'll describe shepherds and wise men coming, they'll describe death and resurrection, they'll describe feeding or healing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Who do you think that is? Well, it's Jesus. Aha! No, it's Mithras. And like, well, okay, show me your documentation. Where are you drawing
exactly?
Because you're saying that Mithras has these features, but where are you getting it from? According to J. Warner Wallace, the you know when the most recent writings of any kind we know about Mithras dates to?
No.
Want to take a wild guess?
It's after the Gospels.
Yeah. Do you want to take another wild guess?
Like 1,000 AD?
How about 1800?
Well,
the mid-1800s is the oldest known writings about Mithras.
Wow.
And when do we have our oldest writings of the Gospels? Excuse me, but like 150 AD?
Right.
I think we have a winner here.
Yeah.
I think Jesus came first, and even if you try to force the whole Mithras concept and say he came first and Jesus stole from that, show me your documents.
Right.
Show me your source writings. You know where the source is? Somewhere in the mid-1800s, there was a painting that was found. I don't know if the painting dates back further or not. I don't know if it dates back to how far. But I'm going to guess, because it's a painting, it probably didn't come from much earlier than the Renaissance age. Because that's where the bulk of things we have as paintings come from.
Mm.
Which still puts it around 1,000 to 1,300 AD. So it's a painting. There's no words. It's a painting. And it came from a time where Christianity had been around for 1,000 years.
Right.
And so the painter who painted this Mithras concept actually probably stole these concepts from Jesus to make this painting. And then in the mid-1800s, when this was found, somebody who was born as a Christian and was raised with a lot of Christian Catholic ideas wrote a book about it. And so they, again, forced a lot of Christian doctrine and traditions onto this painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime you hear some college professor or some well-educated person saying Mithras came first, and they began to spout off all these things, they're not doing their research. They're going as far as Google, and that's it. They're not counting where did Google get their information from.
Wow.
And where is the oldest textual documentation coming from? Because it is so messed up. It is not right. Now, allegedly, this quote-unquote Mithras character predates Jesus, but absolutely zero. The big zero is known about him until a thousand or more years later. And so people are forcing the issue. They're inventing. They're doing their own legend and backwards engineering it. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is even if you say, well, okay, Mithras came from a virgin birth. Well, if the legend says he was born out of a granite rock. Okay, if you want to consider...
Wow, how'd you find that out?
J. Warner Wallace. So if you want to that a granite rock is a virgin, well, okay, if you want to believe that. But it's not a virgin in the same sense that a virgin is a virgin.
Correct.
Anyway, this guy goes on to say, deception may have been well-intended, but Jesus offered no correction to his disciples, and granted, the disciples may have thought they were telling the truth, but Jesus really deceived them. So then he's going back to saying he's not going to try to prove that Jesus was a liar, but he thinks Jesus is a liar. Like that makes no sense. You can't use that as a reasonable, logical point of proof.
Wait, so you're saying Jesus is a liar, but in one breath, but you're almost like, I don't know.
In the opening statement, you're willing to concede that Jesus was not a liar, but as your argument goes on, you're saying, I'm not so sure he wasn't a liar. Mm. And so, which one is it? Either he was a liar. In that case, hey, okay, let's role play. Here I'm Jesus. I'm going to lie to you, and I'm going to tell you, Nathan, that I'm the Son of God, and I'm not really doing these miracles, but I want you to believe I'm doing some miracles. So that way, you can run around and tell everybody that you saw me
that
do amazing
sense.
Things.
Because
so,
I would have to see it to believe it.
And then I'm going to die at some point, and I'm going to tell you that I'm doing this so I can pay for sins of the whole wide world. Now, wait a minute. Self-preservation here. I don't want to die. Why would I do that?
That's right.
Am I suicidal? Am I mentally unstable? Or what? There's no evidence of either in Jesus.
Right.
Although this guy does say, well, plenty of people have mental disabilities but show no outward signs of it. Well, you know what? In this day and age, we have all kinds of powerful drugs to help deal with that. And you might not ever know somebody has a mental problem because of drugs. They didn't have drugs back then. Not like we have today. They didn't have the same knowledge. Back then, they thought if you were mentally disabled, you may have had a demon.
Right.
And what did Jesus do? He cast out demons. And so this guy's gone from proof to his own form of faith and his own form of wanting you to believe in his form of faith to get you to say Jesus was a liar, a lunatic, or even a legend. Now, here's the one last thing that I'm going to say totally refutes all of this garbage that people like this spout, is that if the New Testament books are false, there would be no archaeological evidence.
Please continue.
If you was to say read the Gnostic Gospels, you know, those hidden Gospels that were not canonized. They talk about Jesus, they talk about miracles, and they talk about stuff. But if you was to go and dig an archaeological site, there is nothing this to substantiate those stories. If you was to take a writing like, say, the Books of Mormon, and you start digging where those books say there ought to be something, you will find nothing to support that. You take the New Testament books, and you start digging in the Holy Lands, every time an archaeologist turns over a shovel of dirt, it proves the Bible more and more. There's a lot of things that people used to think were fake about the Bible. People used to say there was no King David, there was no King Solomon. They didn't know where Solomon's colonnades were. They didn't know where the Pool of Bethesda was. They didn't know where this thing was or that thing was. They thought that the Acts was one of the most inaccurate books in all of history. But more and more archaeologists are proving that Acts, the writings of Luke in the book of Acts, is the most accurate historian, even more accurate than people like Josephus and other historians of his age.
Wow.
I was just reading, because I get this email, biblical archaeology emails, and between that and probably J. Warner Wallace, they say that when an archaeologist goes to a site, the books that they carry with them, as a matter of course, is the Gospels.
Wow.
And Acts. It doesn't matter if they're Christian or Jewish or atheist. It doesn't matter what their religious background is. As a matter of course, you would not find an archaeologist worth their salt digging in the Holy Lands who did not, in their toolbox, have the Gospels and Acts.
That is something.
Now, if they're that trustworthy, and so far, things that were thought were mysteries that have been proven, nothing in the Bible that people have a dispute over has ever been found false. If anything, the dispute eventually turns out that it's true. So, if the Bible was a made-up book, and the disciples were lied to and made all this stuff up, then why is it consistently being proven true
right.
by archaeologists? So, yeah, it's a matter of faith. Religion, God, Jesus, all it's a matter of faith. But it's a faith that there is evidence for and hard proof for. So don't let people pull away his arguments and lie to you. Archaeology is the best evidence. People say there's no evidence for the Bible. Talk to an archaeologist. Go look at archaeology websites. Read archaeological magazines. Because his atheists and critics are not. So that's my alleged role-playing.
Good.
And that's what I have for today.
Well, I got to go anyway.
Did you have any closing thoughts of the day?
No, not really.
Let's see. This is from Josh McDowell talking about Lent.
Good. Okay.
Lent is a time of the year that offers us the opportunity to come to terms with the human condition that we spend the rest of the year running from.
So I don't really do much on Lent.
I pick it out of my belly button and my dryer trap. As a Baptist, I have never learned about Lent. I have never studied Lent. I have never observed Lent. I know our guest host we had on a while back, Doug McCoy, says that he's the same way, and only in the last year or two he has actually been exploring Lent and its benefits. And I really have nothing against it. I really don't. If you can do anything to worship God, more power to you. And how about the retrobots? I bet they can find something goofy.
Goofy. I wouldn't call my closing thought goofy.
Well, lay it on us then.
Okay, I will. Pardon me while I have an out-of-money experience.
Oh boy.
I have one. I figured out a way to slow down inflation. Turn it over to a government worker.
Retrobots always do that to us. They find something weird at the last minute. David, what did you do?
I've had about enough of that guy.
Okay, let's just stop. I'm just going to do this and say this is Keith signing off. Thanks for listening, everyone. Tell a friend about us, and we'll see you next week.
Contact Keith at podcast.heltsley.net. That's HELTSLEY.net. While you're there, you can send mail through the contact page, comment on any of these show notes, or just email me directly, keith@heltsley.net. We now have voicemail, area code 401-753-4844. Nathan Caldwell can be contacted through Protectors of the Book. Everything he does can be found at facebook.com/protectorsofthebook. That's P-R-O-T-E-C-T-O-R-S of the book. The music in the show is provided by Carrie Livgren under the Creative Commons license as Freely Received, Freely Given, and is found as part of a collection of Theophilus Bible software. We hope you find everything you need, and if you don't know Jesus, your greatest need is a Savior. Thanks for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Quest for Truth. I am, as usual, your host, Keith Heltsley, here from the Heltsley Studios, live in downtown Donaldson, Illinois, I think. Do I need to restart that?
That'll work. And this is your co-host, Nathan Caldwell, from the far reaches of reality in western Arkansas. In lovely downtown, where do I live at now?
Sherwood.
Sherwood. There we go. Yeah.
You're going to have to do some editing. But save that for bloopers. That's a good one.